Are you concerned that Trump might be elected again
shortly? I think it's very likely. And if it happens, it is likely to be the kind of like the death blow to what remains of the global order.
Hello again, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Michael Matt. This is the Remnant Underground. So we're breaking our own rule. We said we weren't going to come back down here to the underground until after the next week's Christ the King conference down in Brazil. But boy, my phone's been blowing up. Everybody wants to know, you know, what happened? What do you think? What do we do now? You know, I'm going to get into it. I'm going to get right into it as frankly and as honestly as I possibly can tonight. The main thing to keep in mind, friends, is that our entire, the last few months that we were talking about this was always about in the future, there's an election coming up, speak now, try to bring change, try to make them change their mind on the abortion and life issues, right? When there was still time. So the big difference now is here we are. Okay, here we are. We had a massive victory last night, Trump did. And the question is, what do we do? It's like boots on the ground when the war starts. Well, now you got to deal with it. You tried to prevent the war, but here you are. Here we are. So we need to look at this very carefully now. There's no more talk about lesser of two evils and all of this stuff. Now, this is the reality. This is the hand that we've been dealt. And the question is, what are we going to do moving forward?
For the first time in 40 years, the Republican platform does not call for a federal abortion ban. It no longer defines marriage as between one man and one woman, but it doesn't. So is this a sign that your father is moving to the center in some ways or on some issues?
Yes, I think he's always been there on those issues, to tell you the truth. And I think that's reflective of who my father is and what he believes in. And I think that's reflective of my wife, Laura, who runs the RNC, and clearly what she believes in. And I'm proud of the party.
And these are issues that we are now going to have to live with. And we're going to look at tonight at the good and the bad, the positives and the negatives, and how we kind of get together and move forward now. So I'm going to be on a plane, and we're not going to have an underground next week. I'm going to be, well, I'll be on that plane if there's any room on the plane, of course, because of all the Swifties and Hollywood nutjobs that are supposedly leaving the country now that Donald Trump has won. That's the good news. We're going to lose a lot of Hollywood nutjobs. That's great. And by the way, everybody's all happy about this because reprieve, right? Understandably so, is a terrifying prospect, this cackling cammy thing. Here in Minnesota, well, we're not so fortunate. You know, we're still behind enemy lines. We're in occupied territory waiting for the triumphal return of the weeping windbag weirdo, Tim Walz.
Governor Walz and the Walz family, I know your service to our nation will continue.
poor old Tim. No, he's not a happy camper tonight at all. But really, friends, in defense of Tim, whose idea was it to tap this nut job in the first place for the VP spot? I mean, can you guys figure this out? Having been under this guy as a governor, he's such a putz, you know? He's such an Elmer Fudd. If you wanted to lose an election, I mean, I really can't think of anyone better than Tim Walz to help you get her done. But in fairness, I guess I got to say, all the lunatics of Davos, they're all crying today. Even Grandpa George, if he's still alive. I'm not sure if George Soros is still alive, but if he is, it turns out, George, you didn't get the last word after all.
Clearly, I consider the Trump administration a danger to the world, but I regard it as a purely temporary phenomenon that will disappear in 2020.
And in 2024, Donald Trump will come back and kick our lower spinal extremities.
Right? Poor George. That one didn't work out so well. We're going to get into all of it first tonight. Don't forget about our sponsor, America's premier pro-life phone company. For 30 years, our friends at Charity Mobile have been fighting for life. With this special offer, you get a free phone, has no activation fee, and a portion of your monthly payment goes to the pro-life charity of your choice. Might I suggest the Remnant Foundation, which is on their list. Visit Charity Mobile today at charitymobile.com, and that's charitymobile.com. So what to say about this election? An amazing night. I still can't understand how this thing was. Well, it really wasn't that close, but I just can't understand why she was even in the running. Who is this person, and why? Why? Who and why? Yeah, of course. I mean, I'm really not that surprised because obviously, especially when Trump made the concessions, made the compromises that he did on the issue, which we're going to discuss in a moment, It really wasn't a surprise that he won, obviously. If he hadn't, there would be no point in any of us voting ever again, because it's obviously completely fixed. So who knows what we're actually looking at? I spent Election Day actually working on my doomsday bunker, as you see on your screen here, because I figure that no matter what happens, I'm going to need a doomsday bunker. We probably all will. Although, and I got to say in fairness, although it may not be as soon as we thought.
Are you concerned that Trump might be elected again shortly?
I think it's very likely. Mm. And if it happens, it is likely to be the kind of like the death blow to what remains of the global order.
poor Harari. You know, it looks like he's going to cry, you know. And that's just part of the thing. The thing is, we all understood that there were going to be a list of goodies that we were going to receive for the compromise that we didn't feel like we could support morally, right? There were going to be a list of goodies, and one of the goodies is the whole reset thing is coming apart. It was already coming apart. I think now it's officially coming apart, and that's great. But don't forget, this is the problem. We're going to get into this. There's a price to pay for the goodies. Dorian Gray gets to stay young, right? So that's the whole problem with this. When you agree to a certain compromise and now you're going to have some things that are going to make everybody very happy. I know there are a lot of people who are, including me, are very relieved that Tim Walz is not going to be our vice president. Kamala Harris isn't going to be our president. That's fantastic, right? Do we still have concerns? Of course. Of course we do, friends. And I know many of you do too. But for the moment, America's first woman president, a crazy commie at that, failed to materialize last night, and we can all celebrate that together, right? That's one of the things that can be celebrated easily, this pro-abort psychotic Satanist, whatever she is, whatever it is gone now, and the cackle's gone. That's fantastic.
You may clap.
In fact, 2 days before the election, over at remnantnewspaper.com, we published an article by Remnant columnist Angeline Tan, which reminded me and all of us of something I'd forgotten about, that when she was the Attorney General in California, Kamala Harris instructed law enforcement, the staff, to raid the home of Catholic pro-life journalist David Daleiden after his organization unearthed the abortion industry's trafficking of aborted baby parts. And I don't know whatever happened to that Kamala Harris, because that one was scary. The one that we've had in office for the past 4 years is nutty, off the rails goofy. But the one out in San Francisco was pretty darn scary. So I was glad to have been reminded of that, and very happy that Kamala Harris's crushing defeat sends a very clear message to any of the big, bad, evil, demonic politicians out there that when your only qualification for running for office is that you support the murder of preborn babies, well,
you will lose.
And she lost. Now, that said, we have to be honest about what we're dealing with now. As I said at the top of the show, we can't get complacent. I mean, our job moving forward is going to be a lot harder. And again, that's why I was so outspoken when there was still time to change it before the election. Now, we have a difficult reality to deal with.
Former President Trump, you take credit for the decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, which returned the issue of abortion to the states.
Correct.
However, the federal government still plays a role in whether or not women have access to abortion pills. They're used in about two-thirds of all abortions. As president, would you block abortion medication?
First of all, the Supreme Court just approved the abortion pill, and I agree with their decision to have done that, and I will not block it.
I think we can handle this because the Republican presidents, well, their pro-life credentials were never that solid, in my opinion. I always pointed out that every single one from the Gipper moving forward, Republican pro-life presidents, had a pro-abortion wife. Every one of them. And now Donald Trump does too. That's one of the sad things. That's something sad. Look back at 2016 and you see this couple and people were projecting, oh, she's so sweet, she's a Catholic, and they're all going to convert to the Catholic faith. I think when Melania came out and admitted that she's a pretty rabid pro-abort, that was really a shot to the solar plexus. That was sad for a lot of people to see.
In her upcoming memoir, the former First Lady reportedly makes a passionate plea for abortion rights. She writes, "Why should anyone other than the woman herself have the power to determine what she does with her own body? A woman's fundamental right of individual liberty to her own life grants her the authority to terminate her pregnancy if she wishes."
The reality is we got to figure out what we're going to do now. Because the big thing to recall, and again, I'm trying to give you the pros and cons. There are some pros. We already talked about a few of them. I'm going to talk about a few more. But the reality is Donald Trump won this thing. And let's face it, hats off to him. He knows how to win. He's a winner. He's going to win at all costs. He won big, and he did it without you. He did it without me. He did it without us. And that's a very, very important point moving forward, because he did not make any campaign promises to us in order to achieve this victory. And we all know what that means. But you were the ones, there were people in this audience who were saying, once he gets in, he's going to be so pro-life, you're going to be amazed. Well, please God, I certainly hope that's true. I really, truly do. But I also know from my own sources inside, I already did a show on the leaks that we got from inside the Trump camp, from Catholic sources, who I trust. That Trump believes the pro-lifers completely let him down in 2020, and he was humiliated by his loss to senile Joe Biden. And this is why he not only didn't really campaign on the life issues, he just said, well, I sent it down to the states where it belongs and blah, 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 moving right along. There was no full-throated defense of the babies, right? That for the first time, that was gone. He didn't feel like he had to do that this time, right? And I'm not running him down. He was very honest about this. He went out, instead of finding pro-life, pious pro-life people, he went out and got who? He got Elon Musk. He got Robert Kennedy. He got Joe Rogan, for heaven's sakes. Millions and millions and millions of Tulsi Gabbard, right? A whole host of powerful pro-choice to slash actual pro-abortion influencers to get this W. And there's no reason in the world for us to deny that. That's what happened. He admitted Donald Trump has been very honest about it. In fact, he couldn't possibly have been more honest with us about the fact that that's what they were doing this time around. We sent it to the states. Leave me alone, right? And I kind of get that. I understand that. Donald Trump has never been like an uber pro-lifer. So that's what he decided to do this time, and he went and did it, and guess what? It worked. He won. Now we need to deal with it, right? It worked. And here's the thing I want to stress. I don't blame Donald Trump for this, and I never have over the past 3-4 months that we've been discussing this in some detail. I don't blame him. Donald Trump is not exactly a daily communicant. He's not exactly Mother Teresa, right? So I don't blame him for kind of going, what is with these pro-lifers? What is their deal? They can't even help me win anymore. What's their problems, right? So I don't blame him for coming to that conclusion. I blame the spiritual and moral authority that let all politicians down in the world today and has let them all down. I'm sorry, but I blame the guy in Rome. I blame the globalist Pope Francis in Rome. I blame bishops like this lunatic, right? I blame apostate priests like Jimmy Martin. Go ahead and read that, what's on your screen right now. How a Catholic woman's faith provided comfort after the loss of her wife. That's a Jesuit priest, one of the most famous in America. Apparently has no problem with gay marriage, right? And we're going to blame the non-Catholic politician Donald Trump for giving up on Catholic moral theology in the political arena when this kind of thing is going on? No, I blame Team Francis for Donald Trump's flip-flop on abortion and marriage since 2016. Remember who it was. It wasn't Donald Trump, it was Pope Francis who first came out and told the world not to obsess over abortion. Right? Basically, isn't that what we just heard from Donald Trump about this election? Come on, stop obsessing with abortion. I already took care of that. Well, where did he get that? He got it from the world's most recognized moral authority, Pope Francis. We got to get it. Don't obsess over abortion. It was Pope Francis who blasted Donald Trump for what? For building walls rather than bridges. Remember that winter? It was Pope Francis who said Donald Trump isn't a Christian when he was in office the last time. It was Pope Francis who said that he, the Pope, just couldn't figure out what was more evil, a strong border guy, Trump, or a radical pro-abort witch, Kamala Harris. He couldn't figure it out.
Ambedue sono contro la vita, sia quello che butta via i migranti, sia quello che uccide i bambini. Chi è il male minore? Quella signora o quel signore? Non so, ognuno in coscienza pensi e faccia questo.
And then it was Pope Francis who comes out and said, scandalizes the whole world, when he came out and said he wants all priests and bishops to be granting gay blessings, blessings to gay people. Again, you're going to blame Team Trump for walking away from us, from the holy people, from the Christians, from the pro-lifers, and instead teaming up with Elon Musk and other billionaires who've had way more than enough of the woke globalism of Francis and friends. You see? Very understandable stuff that went on here. That's why this is not an attack on Donald Trump at all. I get it. Do you know, for example, where Pope Francis was the day before the U.S. election? Pretty important election, right? For the whole world, not just for our country, but for the whole world. You know where he was? Well, the Holy Father was making a high-profile visit to the home of the most, arguably, the most famous pro-abort in Italy, Emma Bonino, who had been a key lobbyist for the legalization of abortion in Italy, good friend of the Pope's. Gee, Donald Trump, why aren't you more pro-life like the Pope? You get it? You see how it works? You see why we've been saying for a long time that Pope Francis presents a clear and present danger to all of us? Because all the politicians are going, well, obviously, if these moral issues don't mean anything to the guy in white, I'm sure as heck not going to lose votes over it. I'm going to go and get the votes. So it's no wonder to me that Team Trump gave up on the pro-life bit.
The Supreme Court made a decision saying that the American people should have access to that medication. Donald Trump has supported that opinion. I support that opinion.
Just to be clear, you support mifepristone being accessible.
Yes, Kristen, I do.
So we get it. That's what happened. And it's a little difficult to say that what we saw at the election was some great miracle from on high, when what they did to win this election was that, for the first time in 40 years, not call for any abortion ban, no longer defining marriages between one man and one woman. But we get it. And because we get it, that doesn't mean that it was any easier, that any of us weren't devastated by what happened politically. All of us wanted to vote for Trump. All of us wanted to be fully and 100% behind him as we were in 2016, you know? And I want to say something, I want to stop and say something about this audience. I understand what it means to be able to vote for somebody, be able to have hope that maybe, even humanly speaking, a war is going to be fought here and things might be better and our children might be safer. I understand all that, you know, and Trump provided that for us in 2016 especially, right? In 2020, we went for it again, in fact. Not because we ever thought he was a champion of Christ the King, but because we thought, hey, you know, he's standing for the things that matter to us the most, the things that we can't violate in conscience, by the way, right? The things that really define us, the moral, cultural, social conservatism, right? So I want to say I'm just really proud, gratified, grateful, and proud of this audience for being willing to have this conversation, which has been really, really tough. It's much easier to close your eyes and just pretend like you don't see what's going on, isn't it? And just pull that lever. He's the same guy he was in 2016. Everything's changed since 2016, right? Unfortunately.
Donald is the first president to enter the White House supporting gay marriage.
So we had a really tough discussion over the past few months. We took a tough stand, and I think we had a very constructive thing, and I think looking back we're going to be able to say we did this right with clear consciences. I spoke my mind out here on this show every week. You spoke yours. We had great exchanges back and forth. Sometimes it got a little heated, so what? But we allowed both sides to discuss this, to have it out. Also in the pages of this newspaper, we had it out, and on our website, renthenewspaper.com. In fact, a shout out to my friend and columnist, Robert Morrison, who continued to debate this very difficult issue with me personally right up to the very bitter end, right? We published every single one of his articles again in The Remnant. That's the way you're supposed to do it, right? I think that's what our obligation is. Because think about it. We didn't start this fire. I didn't start this fire. You didn't start this fire. We didn't change anything. We just wanted to go back to the polls and vote Trump again and hope for the best, pray for the best, right? 2016 to 2020 was a good run. A lot of good things happened, right? We all want that again. I still want that. I'm still going to fight for that. I'm still going to pray for that, you know? But suddenly we found ourselves in a weird position where we were all just, even since August of 2024, all of a sudden we're like, wait a minute, this has changed. They took the platform apart. They did all these things that made a difference that were not at all like it was in 2016. So we found ourselves divided. Have you actually read the 2024 Republican Party platform? The 2016 platform mentions God 15 times. The 2024 Republican platform mentions him twice. The 2016 platform has 9 powerful statements in defense of the unborn. The 2024 platform removes virtually all of the 2016 pro-life language, including the explicit application of the 14th Amendment to the unborn, and then goes on to positively mention birth control and IVF. The 2016 platform defines marriage as, wait for it, between one man and one woman. The 2024 platform drops any definition of marriage at all. And in the end, yesterday, some of us voted for Trump. Some of us didn't vote for Trump. But none of us voted for Harris. And all of us were trying to do the right. All of us spent plenty of sleepless nights trying to discern God's will. And that's what you have to do. You can't just get carried along by the mob or by emotion or by projecting what you wish were the case when, in fact, the reality is something different. I'm going to try to do the right thing, which is what we did on this show. And by the end, you know, I think everybody, we were all a little torn up inside about what happened, what's happening to this country. We were one of the last countries on earth to have a powerful party, political party, that was pro-life. That's changed now. And we got to fight to get it back, but the reality is that's a harsh thing to think that the United States of America, which led the way in being pro-life politically, is now going to become something like France, something like the UK, where they can't even talk about it. I talked to a friend from the UK in Rome the other day, and he said, boy, oh boy, I hope this doesn't happen, where that the U.S. stops having a powerful political pro-life party, because he said, in my country, in the UK, they're arresting us just for standing silently outside of abortion clinics. So the whole world was looking to the U.S., and they were saying, wow, there's a powerful pro-life country left. Well, now it looks like that's going to change rather dramatically. It already has. And nobody's happy about that. And speaking for myself personally, nobody that I know personally fought harder for Donald Trump over the past year, 8 years, actually, than I did. Even after he lost the last election, I'm still out there in the street risking getting arrested to defend Donald Trump.
Donald Trump decided, he made a decision that, in my opinion, was inspired by God.
Yes.
He made a decision to stand with you, to stand with you, to stand with you, to stand with me, and they hate us.
Yes.
That's what they hate about Donald Trump. It's not Donald Trump, it's us. Nearly 100 million Christian American patriots. That's their problem. That's what they're trying to crush. And he's the figurehead for that crush. He's the one they have to take down, so no one will ever represent us again.
So yeah, I mean, I would really invite, by way of trying to unify all of us, you know, those of us who had trouble with the compromise, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy. But I think we made it, and we made it through this more or less united. We're still brothers in Christ, right? We're ready to fight harder than ever now, you know? And the fear has subsided now that the crazy witch is going to fly off on her broomstick and be gone forever, I hope. You know, and really, at the end of the day, we've exhausted this topic. We know what we have to do. We know what's going on. We're not in denial, right? And we're still in the game. We still got to fight. We have no excuse not to fight, in fact, harder than ever before, for that cultural conservatism that in many ways was the big loser last night. I hate to admit it, but that's just the fact. The Trump ticket proved that Republicans can now win major elections without catering to cultural, social conservatism, to the moral issues. How's it going to pan out? Well, we're going to find out. But we're going in with our eyes open, which was the whole point all along, right? And again, Trump pulled off this victory. He did it without making any campaign promises to us. So there's no serious reason to think anything's going to change with respect to life and marriage under a President Trump administration. And again, I stress, I get it. Politically speaking, he needed to win. He's going to do whatever it took. He's not Mother Teresa. I don't blame him. Wherever possible now, since he's our president, I'm going to support him wherever we possibly can. But we're not going to let up on this issue. You know, and it doesn't make it any easier for us to realize that now, instead of like 100% being able to just kind of fall in behind and support, now we're going to have to continue to raise objections. We're going to have to continue to fight for the cause that matters most to us. So our challenge moving forward is bigger than ever before. We've lost massive political firepower in this country when it comes to the moral issues which matter most to us and which matter most to Almighty God. It's the way it is. Oh, so we have a brand new challenge, if you will. We have to make the case, first and foremost, we have to make the case to the new Trump administration that cultural conservatism, that morality, that Christian morality matters. It matters now more than ever before. Because without it, conservatives may win. Conservatives, whatever that means, if you abandon morality, I'm not sure what it even means anymore. But conservatives may win a few battles, but in the end, they're going to lose the war. That's the message that we need to continue to carry out onto the battlefield every single day now. And I know we will. We still have a powerful pro-life movement in this country, and it's mobilized, and it's ready for war. So I have no regrets. We have to stand up, even if people are going to mock us, even if people are going to be upset with us, right? And I see it as my job. My job as a member of the Catholic press is not to be a cheerleader for the politicians, right? But rather to hold their feet to the fire on these issues. And that's what I did, and that's what I'm going to continue to do. Why? Because the war is just beginning now. This happened in the Catholic Church, by the way. As I said before, a lot of this is familiar ground to me. All of a sudden, the administration of the church, if you will, the hierarchy of the church, went into woke land, modernism, and there were groups, grassroots groups of traditionalists that had to continue to fight, to continue to keep the faith without the support of the hierarchy. The exact same thing is going to happen now in this country. We have to continue to fight for life and for marriage and for family without, certainly without as much support from the prevailing political party, the Republican Party, which again had been falling short on these, on the cultural and moral issues for a long time, but now it's official, right? We're going to be on our own. And you can see what's already happening. In the November 2024 election, a record-breaking 10 states featured ballot measures that would enshrine abortion rights in their state constitutions. Now, 7 out of those 10 states voted to enshrine the inalienable right to abortion in their constitutions, including, alas, Missouri, which had a total ban, total abortion ban, not anymore. So it really isn't enough for us to say, well, look at Dobbs. Trump did the right thing. He sent it down to the states. But as we've explained so many times, with the collapse of the church, with the collapse of, or with the weaponization of public school education, every new generation that comes along is being brainwashed to abandon Christian morality. So saying, well, we're just going to have the states decide, that's not working out so well right now, is it? 7 out of 10 states enshrined abortion as an inalienable right of their, in their constitution post-Dobbs. I'm not blaming Trump for this. I'm just saying our war is just getting started. And by the way, where the governors are proudly pro-life, where they own pro-lifeism, like in Florida and in South Dakota, the measures on the ballot did not pass last night. Thank God for Ron DeSantis down there, pretty much proudly pro-life, right? We've got to keep supporting that and hoping and praying that he continues to be a proud pro-life politician in the future, because this country can't survive without it. But this, what's happening on the ballots and right now, is a snapshot of the future. The war is on, and every man, woman, and child needs to enlist in this war like never before. So yeah, I get it. We're all breathing just a little bit easier tonight for the moment, aren't we? And I thank God for that. I thank God for that reprieve. But there's going to be a price to pay for that sense of peace and security, and we have to be ready to pay it. The lives of the unborn are less protected in America tonight than they've ever been in my lifetime. And the pro-life politicians are being encouraged one way or another to leave the field. But what that means is that it's up to us now. It's up to us, to the people, Christian patriots. We need to stand and we need to deliver and we need to not get discouraged and we need to not get divided and don't ever give up. Don't for one second think it doesn't matter. Everything about this election from both sides, it was all about abortion, wasn't it? All about abortion. Why is it? Because abortion has to do with what? With life. With saying who gets to live and who gets to die. And who is the author of life? God is the author of life. So the whole thing has been a war against Almighty God, and we can't for one second let up. And that was the problem all along with what was happening in the GOP compromise. We're all human. As I say, the church is missing in action. But all the more so then, we need to become witnesses, as Bishop Athanasius Schneider said. When you get to a certain point, when your country becomes so pagan, then it becomes necessary for Christians to become witnesses to the truth. And that's how things change, ultimately. That's how civilizations, great Christian civilizations, are born, by the witness of a small handful of Christians who will not be bullied, who will not be intimidated, who will not back down, who will stand and fight, whether they have political representation or not. And we must become those witnesses to the truth, no matter what, friends. We must become the champions of the unborn, the defenders of the little babies, right? Our cry, our battle cry, is going to have to echo now all throughout the halls of government. We'll never stop. Our battle cry, Christ is King. Long live Christ the King, right? Because that's what matters. Whether our political representation, our political leaders, whether they pledge fealty to Christ the King or not, we must do it with more urgency than ever before.